Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast. My name's Amanda Rocchio, previously Amanda Meixner. I am best known for my meal prep and nutrition content. And today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone. And I hope you're holding up okay during these trying times.
Absolutely. I know it's a little nerve-wracking right now, but today we're here to bring you some action items you can do in your routine right now and distract you just a little bit from what's going on lately. Mm-hmm. Before we get into today's episode, Chris is going to read a 5-star review from one of our listeners.
All right, here we go. Love this podcast. Amanda and Chris do such a great job presenting balanced, well-researched health and fitness advice. Their guests are great too. In the fitness space, there are a lot of people sharing whatever makes them money. I follow Chris and Amanda as they grow their audience over the years on social media and now the podcast. And what I respect most is how they put their audience first and they keep getting better. Very few sources I know I can trust like I can trust Master Your Health. Keep it up.
Thank you so much for that review. If you guys could take a moment and write a review for Chris and I, it would mean so much to the both of us. Today, we're talking all about the immune system. I know that's been more of a concern lately. While we don't know any treatments for the coronavirus yet, this will help support your overall health and put you in a better place for handling anything that comes your way, whether that's stress or the flu or any of that stuff. So we really want to equip you with some action items you can do today and make yourself feel good overall.
Yeah, there's still a lot that researchers don't know about the intricacies and interconnectedness of the immune system. But we are going to lay out some things that that have been proven and have been shown, as well as some emerging research that could prove promising in the future. We're going to talk about certain lines of defense and things that you should stay away from in terms of supporting your immune system, strengthening it to its full capacity. And we did want to address something right off the bat, because there is some contention in the industry about whether or not you can boost or enhance your immune system. And there's a lot of naysayers that say you can't, but we're going to bring out some studies and some research that has proven that there can be an immunostimulatory effect with certain substances as you add them to your diet. And it's not quite cut and dry like we previously thought.
Absolutely. And of course, we're also going to go through some of the things that hurt your immune system. So there's a bunch of things you can do to dampen your immune system. So we want you to stay away from those things and move towards the things that are going to help you feel better and help your immune system to function properly and flourish in a time like this. So First things first, I'm going to go through something that you shouldn't be doing. I know we all know this, but in case you're still not on this bandwagon yet, you should not be smoking cigarettes. Now, I'm sure you've heard that from your parents, your friends, if you're still smoking cigarettes, but we wanted to give you another reason to try to quit. We know it's a hard habit to quit, absolutely, but it's also important for supporting your immune system to not smoke cigarettes. So cigarette smoking has resulted in numerous diseases, including cardiovascular, respiratory, and autoimmune diseases, allergies, cancers, and transplant rejection. Smoking impacts both innate and adaptive immunity and plays dual roles in regulating immunity by either exacerbation of pathogenic immune responses or reduction of defensive immunity. Obviously, switching from cigarettes to nicotine patches is better, but you're not in the clear when it comes to supporting the immune system. And this is because nicotine increases cortisol levels while reducing B-cell antibody formation and T-cell response to antigens. So please keep that in mind. You don't want to be on nicotine patches long term. That's really to get you off cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And don't be fooled that smoking, I think they're called Juuls, The vaporized one, they're really not necessarily any better overall from what we gauge. But we don't know yet because there's still studies being done.
Well, there's different problems that are associated with it. I mean, yes, you don't have, what is it, like 24 different carcinogenic substances in cigarette smoke. So I'm not sure if the vaporizers have, I'm pretty sure they don't have all those carcinogens, but there's a different lung issue that's arising from too much vaping and things like that. So there's still some contention in that, but err on the side of caution, get that nicotine patch.
Absolutely. And yeah, the other thing I've seen too is people get the vaporizers and they end up smoking more than they did with cigarettes. So Even though you're right, there might be some benefits to vaporizing over smoking cigarettes, there's still some downsides most likely, and you end up smoking more sometimes, right? What I've seen. So please be aware of that.
Yeah, there's some habitual thing. I feel that, like, obviously some of it is a chemical dependence. You're craving the nicotine, but some of it is a habitual habitual addiction, a habitual addiction, in that you you know, you just associate smoking with other things. Like you like to have a cigarette after a meal. You like to have a cigarette when you're socializing. And so there's just things that you automatically go to, even though your body is not like craving the nicotine and you're shaking from it, you know? So, and the Juul kind of, it doesn't do that at all in terms of helping that habitual addiction, because you can potentially be putting that thing to your lip much, much more frequently than you would a cigarette, because you don't have to go outside. You can smoke it indoors now. So I think it's kind of a trap, and I don't think we should rely on it in terms of a proper method for quitting.
Totally. And I also think if you're stressed out, you know, and you go to smoke a cigarette, you should sub in something like walking. So when you're stressed, if you normally smoke a cigarette, go for a walk, do something else instead. Do some breathing, you know, pull up a 3-minute YouTube video on breathing or something. It doesn't have to be long. And maybe find something healthy to replace that smoking habit.
Mm-hmm.
Now moving on to something a little more positive, it's really encouraging you to eat a wide variety of whole foods and supporting your immune system with a healthy diet. So obviously a healthy diet supports a variety of different functions in the body, but it also does support the immune system. Now there is some evidence that micronutrient deficiencies, for example, like deficiencies in zinc, selenium, iron, copper, folic acid, and vitamins A, B6, C, and E alter the immune response in animals as measured in test labs. So it's been shown in animals that these micronutrient deficiencies causes problems mm-hmm. in the immune function.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you need to make sure you're including a wide variety of also fruit and vegetables in your diet, because fruits and vegetables, they're full of fiber, and that really feeds the good bacteria in your gut. So we really encourage you to eat the rainbow. Not the Skittles rainbow, not the processed food rainbow, but adding in a variety of fruits and vegetables into your diet that will help you feel good. It'll taste good. And, you know, you kind of see my meal prep. It's usually like a rainbow of food because it looks pretty. I feel good, you know, when I combine a bunch of different colors together.
Yeah, me too. I don't know. It's just maybe just the visual satisfaction makes you think that you're doing everything right. But or maybe just because we've trained ourselves to do that. But yeah, I feel the same way. And the next thing we want to talk about is exercise. Obviously, we wouldn't be talking about this with Amanda and I if we didn't include exercise on this list. And there is a lot of data to support that that it does optimize your immune system. So as we know, it supports overall health, which supports a healthy immune system and metabolic health. Look, regular exercise is one of the pillars of healthy living. I mean, it improves cardiovascular health, lowers blood pressure, helps control body weight, and protects against various diseases. And there's data to support clear inverse relationship between exercise and illness risk. And inverse just means it's opposite, you know, so as one goes up, the other goes down and vice versa. Anyway, so there's an inverse relationship between that, and habitual exercise can delay the onset of age-related dysfunction. To dive into a few of the mechanisms behind exercise and immune function, I'm going to share some of the findings that were published in a 2018 Journal of Sport and Health Science, reviewing dozens of different studies covering the connection between exercise and immune health. So acute exercise, and that's defined as moderate to vigorous intensity, less than 60 minutes, is now viewed as beneficial to the immune system by aiding in the stimulation and circulation of tissues connected to immune cells. So with daily exercise, these changes work together to enhance the immune system's defense activity and metabolic health. Regular exercise has an overall anti-inflammatory influence mediated through multiple pathways. So epidemiological studies consistently show decreased levels of inflammatory biomarkers in adults with higher levels of physical activity and fitness, even after adjustment for potential confounders such as body mass index, which, as I don't know if you know this or not, but body mass index can be a little bit misleading, because like super muscular people can be skewed towards the obese side, even though they have a lower percentage of body fat. So just keep in mind that that's not always a proper measure. But in a study in the American Journal of Medicine, they showed that moderate exercise reduced incidence of cold. So the group took a total of 115 women. Participants were randomly assigned to moderate intensity exercise group or a control group. The intervention group did about 45 minutes of moderate intensity exercise 5 days per week for 12 months. And the control group attended once weekly 45-minute stretching sessions. Towards the end of the year, the risk of cold in stretchers was more than threefold than that of exercisers.
That's crazy.
That's really interesting.
I also think I just want to combine it all and do 5 days a week of moderate exercise with 1 45-minute stretching. I'm just throwing that out there. No, but I know they were using that just as the control group, but I'm just saying we could just get everything together.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive here.
We could still stretch, and even though you don't reduce your risk of cold for stretching, we can combine it all. It'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. There is one caveat that we have to add, and that's the idea that basically if you have too many high intensity workouts within a short period of time, you see an increased risk of illness. So this is a quote from the study that we'll have in the show notes. High exercise training workloads, competition events, and the associated physiological, metabolic, and psychological stress are linked with transient immune perturbations, inflammation, oxidative stress, muscle damage, and increased illness risk. So that's really interesting. So there is a law of diminishing returns when it comes to exercise. And then you actually, as soon as you hit that peak, you actually start declining in the benefits and you start getting some detriments.
Right. So, like you've said before in previous podcasts, like overtraining is absolutely a problem for mm-hmm. many different reasons, including like they saw here with immune function.
Right. I mean, it can do a whole bunch of different things, but more first and foremost, it like overloads cortisol in the system. You know, it's taxing on your nervous system. And so like maybe harder to get into the rest and digest parasympathetic nervous system. If you're constantly doing too heavy workloads, you're working out for too long, you're not resting well at night. I mean, you could be just doing an hour workout a day, but if you're getting 4 hours of sleep at night, you're not getting the recovery that you need. And so just keep that in mind that, you know, you can overdo it.
What is there? You call it like a Goldilocks amount?
Yeah, the Goldilocks zone right there.
The Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always have to remind myself that. I mean, I do think when I was younger, I was able to handle more training. So mm-hmm. I don't know if felt overworked, but I feel like I was probably overworking it. But, you know, pay attention to how you feel. I think that's important. And also, I mean, an indicator, if you're getting sick more mm-hmm. and, you know, you're doing a lot of the right things, but one of the things is you're overtraining, overstressed.
Yeah.
You know, something to think about. So moving on to something kind of related to exercise is how important it is to maintain a healthy weight. Now, we're not talking about those few extra pounds necessarily. It's definitely, if you're really overweight, it is a sign that the body is out of balance. And this too, in turn, can also affect your immune function, your immune system, all that. So obese individuals are in a state of low-grade chronic inflammation in addition to disturbed levels of circulating nutrients and metabolic hormones. So elaborating on that is that you're being overweight a lot of the time can lead to constant inflammation, and this leads to issues with circulating all the nutrients in your body and overall your metabolism.
Like overweight to the point of obesity.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Strong evidence indicates that excess fat stores negatively impact immune function and defense from viruses or parasites in obese individuals, and they may not respond properly to antimicrobial drugs and vaccines. So that's a little scary. Not mm-hmm. only are your defenses weakened.
Yeah, on the front end, it's weakened on the back end when you try to go take some medication for it.
Right? Yeah, so that's a little scary. So again, something to think about when you're approaching, like what biomarkers should I look at for being in a healthy state?
Mm-hmm.
Obesity, like most chronic diseases, has an inflammatory component which accounts for the development of metabolic disease and other associated health alterations. Obesity, like other states of malnutrition, is known to impair the immune function, altering leukocyte counts as well as cell-mediated immune response. So like you would probably assume that someone severely underweight would be malnourished. Obesity also has the same problem and signs of being malnourished when you're severely overweight.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, evidence has shown an altered immune function contributes to the development of obesity.
So basically what this study shows is that there's a positive feedback loop between local inflammation that's in the fat tissues and an altered immune response. And both of these contribute to the development of related metabolic complications. So one can lead to the other and vice versa. Sum all that up.
I love how they call it a positive feedback loop, because to me that sounds like a negative feedback loop. I'm just saying. Obesity is also associated with metabolic disturbances that cause tissue stress and dysfunction. Obese individuals are at a greater risk for chronic disease and often also have other issues like metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, and systematic markers of chronic low-grade inflammation. So none of the good stuff. Recent findings have also highlighted the substantial impact that obesity and metabolic syndrome parameters have on immunity and pathogen defense, including the disruption of lymphoid tissue integrity, alterations in leukocyte development, phenotypes and activity, and the coordination of innate and adaptive immune responses. And these changes are associated with an overall negative impact on chronic disease progression, immunity from infection, and vaccine effectiveness. So really, when you're severely overweight for an extended period of time, it really leads to a host of issues. And while we definitely don't want you to be obsessed with your weight, it is important to pay attention to as it is an indication that your body is out of balance.
All right, next we want to talk about alcohol. And obviously when we're all sitting at home, or at least you guys that are in the cities that are on lockdown, we're all sitting at home, we're trying to pass the time, but do not be tempted to do it with alcohol because your body can't store alcohol, so it has to prioritize metabolizing it. So it has a bunch of implications in terms of the different reactions that go on to the body. But for example, one of the things that it does do is say if you're eating a big meal while you're drinking, your body will definitely prioritize metabolizing that alcohol before it even starts to break down that food and metabolizing that, absorbing nutrients, all that kind of stuff. So you're really kind of setting yourself back because what we'll get into later is that, you know, 80% of your immune system is in your digestive system. And if all that is bogged down because it can't process the food, because it's processing the alcohol, you get what I'm saying. And so you don't want to overload your system like that. So
that would also be a good idea if you are going to drink alcohol to kind of separate it out from that meal and enjoy it a little bit spaced out from that meal.
Right. So like I said, it pushes other metabolic processes and functions to the back burner, and you definitely don't want to do that. And it's associated with a greater likelihood of acute respiratory stress syndromes, sepsis, alcoholic liver disease, and certain cancers. There's a higher incidence of post-operative complications and slower and less complete recovery from infection and physical trauma, including poor wound healing. Alcohol also disrupts immune pathways in complex and seemingly paradoxical ways. And these disruptions can impair the body's ability to defend against infection and contribute to organ damage associated with alcohol consumption. And it also affects the structure and integrity of the GI tract. So it alters the number and relative abundances of microbes in the gut and microbiome, and it disrupts communication between organisms and intestinal immune system. It also damages epithelial cells. So epithelial cells are is like the lining of outer surfaces of organs and blood vessels, airways, things like that, and also including the lining of your GI tract. So it damages those, it damages T cells, and this type of white blood cell called neutrophil in the GI system. And this disrupts gut barrier function and causes the leakage of microbes into the circulation. So that can be really problematic because then the immune system starts attacking these microbes because they get into the circulation of the body. So a whole host of issues can come when that intestinal wall, that barrier in the intestinal wall gets broken and things are allowed to leak through. And that's called intestinal permeability for if you're looking for the actual medical term.
Or also known as leaky gut, if you want to know the
There's
easy
no
term.
Such thing as leaky gut.
Anyway. Hey, it's easier for me to understand. I'm sure it's easier for you to understand too.
Yeah. So when this happens, the leakage of bacterial products from the gut activate the innate immune system in the liver, and this triggers inflammation that underlies a condition called ALD. And this is a nervous system condition that affects more than 2 million Americans and which eventually may lead to liver cirrhosis and liver cancer. So, you know, you don't want to start breaking down your cell walls and contribute to that because there's already enough chronic inflammation from foods and things that we ingest. You know, like we're talking about alcohol right now. There's a bunch of different things. You know, ibuprofen is another thing that can break down the intestinal lining. So you definitely don't want to mess with your gut. It's you know, 80% of your immune system. So make sure you're protecting it. Alcohol also disrupts ciliary function in the upper airways. And that's the ability for your body because you have these little cilia that move and work things out of the lungs. I'm doing this hand motion right now. Nobody can see me, but anyway.
I appreciate it.
But they move and they work things out of the lungs. And this actually goes back to what we were talking about with nicotine, because nicotine actually stuns these things and kind of blunts their function as well. So yeah, back to not smoking. But anyway, so this disrupts the alcohol disrupts ciliary function and impairs the function of immune cells, and it weakens the barrier function of the epithelia and the lower airways. So the cells that line it. So we want to stress that alcohol consumption does not have to be chronic to have negative health consequences. So please err on the side of caution, especially during the pandemic. I mean, you know,
absolutely. I mean, there's other things, again, like I said, that you can turn to when you're stressed out. Like, you know, your bathtub isn't closed off right now. You can take a nice Epsom salt bath, light some candles, put on some comedy. So try to add in these other things besides alcohol. And Chris and I are not saying to never drink. Just don't make it a habit. Don't make it a habitual thing.
Well, why don't we just cover minimizing stress right now, since that's what, because most people, you know, they want to drink, be kind of to chill and
we should absolutely
mellow
do
out,
that.
So
let's go right to it. So when it comes to stress, we're talking about chronic stress, not, you know, like a little bit of stress here and there, because that can be beneficial. but really the chronic stress, which you might be dealing with now with the pandemic. So we really want you to find healthy ways to help deal with the stress a little bit. I know it can be hard, but that is absolutely important. You should make it a priority.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time, chronic stress comes from normal activities like going to work and all the different responsibilities and the everything piling onto our plate and having to deal with them and having no break from it, right? But now it's just a different set, a different combination of stressors because a lot of people are out of work, underworked. You know, you can't get certain things, certain necessities out there. So I know some stores had empty shelves for a minute. It's calming down now, but people are kind of freaking out, panicking still. So we have a different set of stressors to deal with now. And so I think this is one of the best parts of this podcast we can give everybody.
Absolutely. Providing some helpful tools to help you manage that stress. And now when it comes to stress, it can really cause a wide variety of issues, including upset stomach, hives, even heart disease are linked to the effects of emotional stress. Despite the challenges, scientists are actively studying the relationship between stress and immune function. So right now we're going to provide some solutions for you because we could go on about the issues it causes. But we're solution oriented on this podcast, and Chris's favorite saying is get your mind right.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote down a couple ideas that he likes to do. What are a few things you like to do, Chris?
I wrote down meditation for everybody else. I told you I'm not very good at it, but I do more like breathing into the diaphragm and kind of like mindfulness exercises and kind of just active meditation. You know, I'm not sitting in the lotus position. I close my eyes, sit in one spot, and just kind of like let the thoughts roll through.
I'm definitely going to start incorporating meditation back in because I am noticing that I have like this chronic anxiety right now, even though I probably am in a pretty good position and I do have a lot to be grateful for. So I was like, okay, what I'm doing right now is not enough. So I'm going to add back in some meditation. I'll probably use the app Headspace. There's so many free options on YouTube. So that is definitely more my thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you can call what I do meditation, but I highly recommend it if you can get in that space. If you haven't started, try to do some different form of it. Like I said, you can do it like I did. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be the sage in the living room, like, you know, between thoughts and not thinking of anything and just pure Zen mode.
Absolutely. And I think it's a misconception that you have to sit in lotus pose. I mean, if that helps you get in the mindset, go for it. But if you want to just sit there, like sit normally on a couch, even lie down, if that helps you relax a little bit more, then absolutely do that.
Yeah. Whatever's going to help you breathe into your diaphragm and just relax. Cause that's what we're doing. We're trying to minimize stress with this as this method. Another thing you can do is you can take supplements. I mean, you have things from magnesium, ashwagandha, B complex, reishi mushrooms, omega-3s, theanine, GABA, 5-HTP are all reported to promote relaxation. And there are different reasons. There are different reasons for this. It's not, you know, there's not one mechanism that controls all of these. So for example, like ashwagandha can reduce cortisol and 5-HTP may act through the elevation of serotonin. So we're not going to go through the mechanisms of all of these, but just know that these have all been shown to promote relaxation, reduce cortisol, things like that. So there's also kava, valerian root, lemon balm, and other herbs that are reported as anti-anxiety calming agents.
Right. And we obviously want you to make sure to check with your doctor if you're on a lot of medication to see if any of these supplements might interfere with those medications.
Mm-hmm.
But these are just some of the ones that we have on our list that we like to use, and we'll make sure they're included in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Another tip that I like to do is journaling. So I don't really do the long form journaling. That's an option, but I have my gratitude journal that I do pretty much every day.
Mm-hmm.
The 5-minute journal that Chris did 3 pages in.
Hey, I think it's 4 or 5 now.
I'm just kidding. You know, like different methods work for different people, but that one has worked for me. If you follow me on Instagram, you probably see it on my story. Mm-hmm. Like at least probably once a week, probably annoying sometimes,
yeah.
But that helps ground me because there's always something you can be grateful for, even in trying times. So I try to look at that.
Yeah, the gratitude. And another one is reducing caffeine intake. And so I would try to, especially if you have a problem sleeping and if that's one of your issues as far as cortisol, if you say have an afternoon cup of coffee, try to maybe switch that down to a cup of green tea or decaf coffee. But trying to reduce your overall caffeine intake, especially if you drink more than, I would say, 1.5 cups a day, would be a good strategy for reducing stress. Obviously, we talked about exercise. That's a great stress reliever, especially if we're all pent up. And those of us on lockdown, pent up in our apartments, get out and, you know, do a sprint workout, go run around the apartment, you know, as you dodge people on the sidewalk while they're out for their walks. You know, we did that last night. We were like kind of weaving in and out, keeping that 6 foot distance.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because people are still like very friendly, even more so.
Yes.
Because they're out, they're kind of like shut in. They're not going to work. They're not seeing the normal people. And they're not having the normal social interaction. So you're passing people and neighbors are actually smiling and saying hello, which is, believe it or not, to you people around the world, to the rest of the country in Los Angeles, where there's so many people, it's a rarity that even your neighbors like look you in the eye and say hello.
Yeah.
It's been a phenomenon that I've noticed ever since I moved out here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it depends on the neighborhood you're in, because I still think if you're in a more suburban area in LA, but I guess just because the city's so huge, they're like, that's just another number.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, we're supposed to stay in our home, aside from like walking outside or walking the dog, I feel like people are really craving that social interaction. So yeah. I definitely noticed they're a lot more talkative.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me to another point we have in this list, and that's reach out to friends and family. If you can't spend time with them because we're all quarantined up here, then, you know, do a little group Skype and everybody gets on and kind of talks about it, and don't talk about the coronavirus. You know, I mean, you can talk about it, you know, maybe share some information if somebody is out of the loop or whatever. But the main thing is that you're seeing this day in and day out is the only thing everybody is talking about. So when you spend time with your friends and family and you're really trying to reduce that cortisol, you know, we spend all day thinking about this stuff. Just try to think about something else, get back to your normal conversations. Ask everybody how they're doing on other fronts, and really just try to, I'm not saying distract yourself because that's a cop out, but you really can get away from that one track mind.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't think a certain level of distraction is okay. We're not talking about being ignorant. We're talking about just talking about something else. Yeah. That level of distraction.
There's a line between putting your head in the sand and, you know, getting distracted for a positive reason.
Yes. And so also you can use, we like to use Zoom for larger calls. You can sign up for free. So there's Zoom, just Google Zoom. And there's also an app called House Party, which was fun too, because they had some games. So you would like FaceTime your friends on this app called House Party, and you could play a game where you like draw something. You got to guess what that person is drawing. So, you know, some interesting techniques in these times.
Yeah. And then along the same lines, if you can spend time with somebody, hugging or spooning, Amanda calls it cuddling. I can't use that word.
Cuddling.
That term.
Can spooning. We get a cuddle session after this podcast, babe?
Yes, absolutely. cuddling, spooning, whatever you want to call it, hugging reduces salivary cortisol. It increases oxytocin, both of which reduce cortisol, reduce stress. And so, you know, definitely get that oxytocin release.
Absolutely. And we're not saying to go hug strangers right now, because obviously that's off the table with the social distancing. But yes, whoever you're at home with, hopefully you're at home with a partner or some kids or your family, give them some hugs. And if you're not, you know, virtual FaceTime kisses.
Yeah. And actually, in other times, you'd be able to call a professional cuddler. There's an actual service out there for professional cuddlers. But no, you don't have that luxury in this time and age.
I think that might be my backup career when things get back to normal, which they will. They'll get back to normal. Mm-hmm. Can I be a professional cuddler, babe?
I forbid it. But anyway, so another one that you can do, surprisingly, is just chewing gum. That's been shown to reduce some stress. And
that's crazy. I saw that on the list and I was like, that is so random.
I don't know, because I love chewing gum when I'm playing sports, when I'm at the gym. Back in the day when I was in school, I try to hide as much as possible. So I get it, especially if you're very hyperactive in the mind and your mind is always racing. It could be good because, I don't know, just somewhere for that energy to go.
That makes sense. And also try to find aspartame-free gum. You can find that now. I think there's a company called Pure Gum. So look that up. Try to find those aspartame-free versions. There's also even natural ones, which are a little weird, but they eventually crumble in your mouth. But hey, if you're trying to be more natural, there's a few options out there. So check those out.
Yeah. And then one thing that we've been trying to do more lately is watching more comedy.
Yeah, no scary movies on our list lately.
Oh, absolutely not.
And I'm not, what's that movie that's like trending on Netflix? I refuse to watch that.
Outbreak.
Like, why would anyone want to watch that right now? It's like they want to torture themselves just a little bit.
Absolutely.
Or I guess you could watch it and be like, well, it's not that bad.
You know, some asshole at Netflix was like, we should put Outbreak on just to freak everybody out.
I mean, they're probably just going with the trend, to be fair.
No, absolutely. And then last but not least is listen to some chill music. I wouldn't listen to your Rage Against the Machine this at certain time. I don't know. Maybe you could, but I don't know.
If that's relaxing for you,
maybe it relieves stress for you. Maybe it actually is a release for most people. But yeah, try to just listen to music, whatever calms you. It's a subjective thing, but that has been shown to reduce some stress as well.
So moving on to something else on our list that's kind of related to stress is also making sure you're getting enough sleep. So the CDC concluded that more than a third of the U.S. wasn't getting enough sleep. So we keep talking about it, but people are not getting enough sleep. Studies show that people who don't get quality sleep or enough sleep are more likely to get sick after being exposed to a virus, such as a common cold virus. Lack of sleep can also affect how fast you recover if you do get sick. So I definitely notice that when I travel and then I'm not sleeping well, those are the times that I have gotten sick. So I can say N of one that's true, but there are studies to support that too.
Mm-hmm.
So sleep strengthens T cells, which are a type of immune cell that fight against regular pathogens. And they do this by primarily activating the sticky type of protein called integrins when the body detects infection. The stickiness allows it to attach to the infected cell and kill it. There are much higher levels of integrin activation for those who are well rested. So as you can see, those are some of the mechanisms going on when you're getting good sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Stress hormones would have the ability to negatively affect the immune system dip when the body sleeps. I know, I can tell. Sometimes I just love my sleep and I feel so much better.
Sometimes.
All the time. Oh. Okay. I know this is why I'm going over this, because I love sleep. And during sleep, your immune system releases proteins called cytokines. Certain cytokines are needed to increase when you have an infection or inflammation or when you're under stress. Sleep deprivation may decrease production of these protective cytokines. In addition, infection-fighting antibodies and cells are reduced during periods when you don't get enough sleep.
Yeah, so she's looking at me right now being like, hey, you need to get some sleep, asshole, because I don't get very good sleep at all. And so every time we do one of these podcasts, I feel like every podcast we cover sleep, and every podcast you're looking at me out of the corner of your eye like, get your fucking sleep right.
Absolutely. And now's a good time, because if you are working from home and you do have a little bit more time, like you don't have your commute and, you know, you have a little bit more time, add that to your sleep. I'm all about it. I'm all about the sleep right now. Although I think I saw a funny meme the other day that was like, I got a full day of sleep, ready for a full day of hand washing and staring out the window. I'm like, that was funny. But seriously, you know, make it a priority, and, you know, don't let stress and anxiety take away from your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You really need it right now. Now's a good time to focus on it.
Right. And, you know, it does affect, you know, lack of sleep can affect certain processes, that metabolic processes and things like that, which leads us to maintaining a healthy gut. So about 80% of the immune system resides in the gut. And this is why it's important to maintain the integrity of intestinal walls and the gut microbiome. And some of this we covered in the alcohol section. We definitely need a healthy gut to absorb nutrients, and we need to absorb nutrients to optimize the immune system. So you see how this is all connected.
Right. And you also, as they say, you're not only what you eat, you are what you absorb. It's like the new saying.
Right. So if your gut is just riddled with chronic inflammation, it's not going to be absorbing nutrients as well, because you have that breakdown of the cell wall like we talked about. So yeah, so that is one thing you need to focus on. Our gut bacteria aids with digestion. It produces a number of neurotransmitters for optimal brain function and regulates immune homeostasis. And immune homeostasis is maintaining the balance between immune system reacting and fighting certain agents in the body, but not others. And that's a very important thing. And this is one of the problems when that homeostasis gets thrown off. That's when you have like these autoimmune diseases, when they start attacking certain substances in the body that they shouldn't be attacking. So you can also take certain probiotics for specific reasons, but eating a wide variety of vegetables is really the best way to build a diverse microbiome. And you got to also make sure that you're feeding that gut bacteria with soluble fiber. And that soluble fiber is readily fermented by the gastrointestinal microbiota. And when we talk about soluble fiber, we're including resistant maltodextrins, resistant starch, inulin, polydextrose, and soluble corn fiber. So anything along those lines is going to ferment in the gut, produce those short chain fatty acids and a bunch of other positive effects.
Right. And like Mary said in our previous Gut Health Part 2 podcast, probiotics are helpful, but they can't recolonize the gut necessarily. So that's why Chris is, you know, emphasizing eating a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, and also fermented foods.
Mm-hmm. And certain cells in the lining of our gut excrete massive quantities of antibodies to combat viruses, pathogenic bacteria, and toxins. And we do have a two-part podcast on gut health, so you should check that out. But this is an extremely important aspect that should not be overlooked.
Totally. And, you know, like Chris said, you got to get your mind right. You got to get your gut right. I'm adding to your terms.
And they're connected, like we showed in the two-part podcast. You got to check that out.
Totally. So I wanted to touch on something that you technically still can do. So I don't want you to forget about adding this to your to-do list, but it's to get some time outside, even if it means just stepping out on your balcony. If you know you're in a too crowded area, there's too many people around and you want to follow the rules of social distancing, opening the window, stepping outside on the balcony. And if you can, if it's not too crowded, go outside for a walk, because really getting outside will help make sure your body is synthesizing vitamin D. So in response to sunlight, the skin produces vitamin D. Vitamin D has many important functions, including regulating the absorption of calcium and phosphorus and facilitating normal immune system function. Getting a sufficient amount of vitamin D is important for normal growth as well as improved resistance against certain diseases. A 2010 randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial, so that's the gold standard, in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showed that vitamin D helped reduce your likelihood of developing the flu. So again, the research is there. Getting vitamin D is important. Obviously, ideally, you let your body produce vitamin D naturally by getting out in the sun, but there will be some factors limiting how much vitamin D your body produces. So this will depend on the pollution in your area, whether or not you're using sunscreen. So Chris has said this before, but wait to put on sunscreen till 5, 10, 15 minutes after you've been out in the sun, up to 20 minutes, basically.
Yeah, depending on like whether or not you've developed a base before, you know.
Right,
like,
we don't want you to get a sunburn. Yeah. That's not good.
Yeah.
Also, whether you live in big cities where the buildings block the sunlight. So if you're walking in the shadows, of course, that's going to factor in. Also, having darker skin will limit the amount of vitamin D you produce. So the higher levels of melanin in your skin, the less vitamin D the skin can absorb.
Right. And so this can range depending on your levels of melanin. So for some people, like Caucasians and things, 20 minutes outside could be enough. But for others, 2 hours might be the case. And so, yeah, it's just crazy. And so in that situation, if you're not getting that on an average, on a daily basis, then you should definitely be supplementing with some D3.
Absolutely. You can also get vitamin D for certain foods like salmon, sardines, egg yolk, and shrimp. So if you can get some of those foods in. I mean, I know sardines don't sound like the tastiest food ever. I don't know. What do you think of sardines, Chris?
It's like if I put it in a salad with enough things, I'm fine with it, you know. But if I'm eating it straight up, like I did in Costa Rica,
we didn't really have that much food, but we were hungry. Chris and I are hungry all the time. I was gonna say we eat a lot. Mm-hmm. We eat a lot. We eat a lot of whole foods, but we eat a lot. And we were on vacation in Costa Rica. And there wasn't that many snacks around. And so Chris was just eating sardines out of the tin, the can. And the look on his face was disgust. And then my brother's girlfriend was in the corner like, how can you eat something that doesn't taste good? And he's like, it's good for me. It's good for my health. I'm going to power through it. Not everyone can be like Chris, though. I don't know. I wasn't doing it.
I was suffering.
So researchers have also seen that there might be another mechanism at play besides just vitamin D production for getting out in the sun. In a Georgetown University Medical Center, researchers also found that sunlight, through another mechanism separate from the vitamin D production, energizes T cells that play a central role in human immunity. So this was a little interesting. I think there's definitely more research needed, but they basically found that low levels of blue light found in sun rays make T cells move faster, indicating that these key immune cells get activated by blue light. So it seems like a little bit of a stretch to me. Again, this was also done in mouse cells, but I think it is a good indication that there's probably something else going on. So like we say, the human body is so complex that really there's not even enough research to really tell us all the intricacies that's going on. But when you think about it, when you're out in the sun, like you feel good, it feels good to me, like naturally. Chris and I were sitting out there this morning on the chair. We got a little photo. We're smiling. I was like, you know what? This is a good moment today. I want to embrace it. Mm-hmm. Embrace, again, those little things that you can turn to right now.
Right. So I wanted to move on and talk about age in the immune system and how it can change over time. As we age, our immune system gets weaker. And obviously right now we're dealing with that with this coronavirus outbreak and the elderly being the most susceptible. So we want to talk about that and kind of the breakdown of the immune system as we age. So as we age, our immune system response capability becomes reduced and in turn contributes to more infections and more cancer. Compared to younger people, the elderly are much more likely to contract infectious diseases. Respiratory infections, influenza, and particularly pneumonia are leading causes of death in people over 65 worldwide. This increased risk correlates with a decrease in T cells. And there's significant evidence of connection between nutrition and immunity in the elderly. Even in affluent countries, micronutrient malnutrition is surprisingly common, especially in the elderly population. And micronutrient malnutrition is where a person is deficient in some essential vitamins and minerals. And essential means you have to get it from your diet, that you can't synthesize it from other nutrients. Older people tend to eat less and have less variety in their diets. So older folks should definitely get tested, talk to your doctor about possible changes to the diet and supplements, and to correct these deficiencies.
That's good. So you can obviously still give yourself a leg up as you get older by just addressing some of those maybe micronutrient deficiencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just because you're, like we talked about before, we talked about obesity and malnutrition. We talked about eating disorders and malnutrition and, you know, and now we're talking about age. But just because you maybe don't fall into any of these categories doesn't mean you're not deficient in some of these things. So, I mean, a lot of people, like a vast majority of Americans, I mean, can't imagine people in, you know, let's just say the developing countries and underdeveloped countries. I can't imagine what they're dealing with, but the vast majority of people in the U.S. have vitamin D deficiency. And that's just one of the deficiencies. We can go down the list or whatever. But, you know, and they talk about vegans and vegetarians being B12 deficient, but there are many omnivores that are B12 deficient as well. And so you'd be surprised, I bet, even if you have a normal diet and you take a multivitamin a day, you'd be surprised at how many people are still deficient in one category or another.
Right. So again, that goes back to, you know, at some point looking into getting tested with someone, a doctor, and also remember eating a wide variety of foods, because that will help too.
Right.
Moving on to one of the common questions that people ask, and I've asked this before, is does cold weather cause colds, right? Like mm-hmm. that's kind of like the assumption, oh, in winter, it's cold till you get a cold. But really, most health experts agree that the reason winter is cold and flu season is not that people are cold, but that people spend a lot of times indoors and in close contact with other people who can pass on their germs.
Mm-hmm.
As you can see with this virus, you know, social distancing seems to be one of the better solutions right now to stop the spread. So that's kind of what happens in the winter. You're kind of packed into a small space and you're not getting outside. So a lot of people are vitamin D deficient, which can lead to a lot of immune dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I would just take some precautions, you know, in these times, is that even though it may be cold outside still in your area, I know it's snowing. It snowed today in St. Louis, which is crazy.
It snowed today in St. Louis?
Yeah, my mom
now texted me. Now I feel like a mean person sending her a photo of us out in the sun.
That's exactly why I did that. Just rub it in her face. But no, I mean, so if it's cold, I mean, just for a minute, open up those windows, air out your place, get a nice breeze in there, and then you can kick the heat back up. But I mean, it's good to air things out, wipe your surfaces down, you know, get some antiseptic towels and really take that preventative measure to protect yourself.
I've also never washed my hands more in my entire life. I mean,
you know what's funny? There's a video of Arnold Schwarzenegger telling his dog how to wash his hands.
No
he's
way.
Got this dog on the counter and he's telling everybody how to wash their hands. And I think of it every time I do it, because my cousin Tony sent this and he's like, I think of this every time I wash my hands. And now he like implanted that. So now every time I wash my hands, I'm doing it in like Arnold's voice in my inner monologue. Like, you do it like this, you know? And so it's actually one of the best videos out there. But I really like it, and make sure you're doing that properly and just, you know, erring on the side of caution, like we were saying.
Totally.
So lastly, we want to talk about herbs. Now, there is some contention on this issue as to whether herbs have a provable effect on the immune system. There's some supporting evidence for certain herbs having antiviral properties and other immune stimulating properties. And we're going to go down the list. We're not going to talk about the mechanisms for every single one because it'd be too much. We're just going to put them on your radar and you can look into it yourself. But you have oregano, sage, basil, fennel, garlic, lemon balm, peppermint, rosemary, echinacea, sambucus, licorice, astragalus, ginger, ginseng, dandelion, sambucol. And sambucol is a black elderberry-based product that has natural antiviral properties. So we're just going to talk about this one, and this will be an example of of kind of like what we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast about how some people will say that there is no way that you can boost immune system, but these studies strictly say, quote, that these things have an immunostimulatory effect. So when you talk about something being a stimulant, you're essentially enhancing it.
Absolutely.
So regardless, no matter what way you want to phrase this, whether you want to talk about optimizing the immune system to have it reach its fullest level, or you want to talk about boosting, whatever, you can, that's a semantics game.
Yeah, I was like, I swear some of this is just a game of semantics.
But bottom line is that the studies themselves use this kind of language. And so we're going to use the same language, and you choose to frame it in your mind, whatever way you want to do it. So black elderberry based product, Sambucol, was shown to be effective in vitro against 10 strains of influenza virus. A double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized study showed that Sambucol reduced the duration of flu symptoms by 3 to 4 days. Convalescent phase serum showed a higher antibody level of influenza virus in the Sambucol group than the control group. So that's a beautiful thing. And the antibody level is obviously the things that are attacking the virus. So it also showed that production of inflammatory cytokines were significantly increased. And depending on the cytokine, there was either like a 2-time increase or a 45-fold increase.
Wow.
And so I think it was TNF-alpha that had the 45-fold. So cytokines are a category of signaling molecules that mediate and regulate immunity and inflammation. And Sambucol, quote, could also have an immunoprotective and immunostimulatory effect when administered to cancer and AIDS patients in conjunction with chemotherapeutic or other treatments. So obviously more clinical trials need to be developed, but this study is just one example of how it is proven that some of these herbs can stimulate the immune system more so than what would happen at a baseline.
Totally. And remember to look online and check whether these herbs, you know, mess with some of the medications you're taking, or check with your doctor. That's always the safest bet, because herbs can get in the way of certain medications. So double check that. But these are some promising things to look into and just kind of help your overall immune system.
Yeah. And also pay attention to the dosages that are suggested whenever you buy them. You know, just don't just shove your face with echinacea just because it can possibly have a reduction in you know, the amount of days you're dealing with a cold, for instance. You know, so
right. Like we've said time and time again, there is such thing as too much of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Goldilocks approach to most of the things we talk about, actually.
Yeah.
So it's good to pay attention to that. Also, just remember that this is absolutely not to treat the coronavirus. Right now, there is no standard treatment right now, and that's the issue. That's why social distancing is going on. That's why, you know, at least I can hug Chris as much as I want, but I can't go near any of my friends yet. But this is just to help you be in a healthy place, to feel better, and also maintain, you know, a better lifestyle while we're stuck somewhat indoors and stuck away from people right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. We really want to keep bringing some positivity to your life, talk about other things out there, and really just help you feel better and have a positive outlook.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Absolutely. Stay safe and keep your distance.
We love you all. Don't forget to video chat your friends. Hit me up on Instagram @MeowMikes, and we can't wait to talk to you later.
All right. Bye.